and you're listening to Radio Regent. This is Mally, aka Docu Vixen, and that was Diasporic Music with Norman Otis Richmond, and that was Izili Danto, you can search her. She's on Facebook. She has a website, and we'll be posting that on our website and all that information. So, and also, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search us Saturday Morning Live. And we're also on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Live Saturday. But we're going to now go to Amandla. And they're doing a report called Remembering Amilcar Cabral. Yes.
This month marks the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Amilcar Cabral, who was the leader of the PAIGC, the liberation movement in Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde in West Africa. The assassination was a very dark moment for Africans and indeed for oppressed people around the world because of what Cabral represented, both in terms of his politics, his role as a revolutionary leader, but also as a thinker. And he was a real inspiration. He really pushed the boundaries for how people thought about what liberation actually is. So tonight, to mark this sad anniversary, we've invited Ahmet Lowe, who's a member of the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa. I might add, a deep thinker in his own right, and a student of Cabral, somebody who's really read his works and thought a lot about Cabral. So I'm very happy to welcome Ahmet Lowe back to the studio. Ahmet, can you hear me?
Hello, Graham.
Hi, welcome back to Amandla.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Nice to hear your voice. So Cabral was very special in a lot of ways. I think some people today simplistically think of him as simply a revolutionary leader, which certainly was important, and we will talk about that tonight. But he was also a theoretician and a thinker and explored what the nature of liberation actually is. And I think in particular, culture, his whole exploration of culture was so important. He said that national liberation is necessarily an act of culture, and that an oppressed people must return to the upward paths of their own culture. So, Ahmet, could you kind of help us understand Cabral's thinking about culture and its role in liberation?
Yes, as you mentioned, he was a very, very deep thinker in terms of analyzing the phenomenon culture. But to better understand his analysis about culture, we have to understand a little bit his little bit of background. Mm-hmm. And Cabral, I should say, is coming from a mixed background. His parents were from the island of Cabo Verde and also in Guinea-Bissau. And he was a member of the what one could term in a colonial context as the little educated class of people who had access to formal type of education. And as such, he managed to further his education in Europe, in Portugal, and then from there, he was there at the time when Europe was devastated by fascism, and then especially in Portugal, with the dictatorship of Franco. And it's within the struggle against fascism when he was studying in Portugal that he gets familiarized with a lot of the theories of the time.
Let me just interject for our listeners who don't know this. Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde were Portuguese colonies, so just to kind of set that up. And
exactly, that's why most of the students at that time were studying in Portugal itself. And Cabral was one of the member of a group of students, African students, who were very active in Portugal at the time during the anti-fascism struggle. And after completing his studies there, it was when he went back to Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, and with a group of friends launched a political party called the PAIGC that led the struggle for independence. Now, going back to your question regarding culture, Cabral had a very, 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 very creative analysis of culture, because when this movement was happening, you can remember that the left was also in a lot of theoretical analysis regarding culture and what triggered the forces for struggle. And then there was this accepted notion that class struggle is a motive force of history. So, which in a sense is true, but Cabral came and tried to put a nuance to that analysis by saying that if we consider that the phenomenon of class struggle is what drives history, it would mean that basically that people who have a very low level of class conflict within their society are outside of history, mm-hmm. and that would leave the huge majority of African people and also of First Nations in the Americas outside of history. So he tried to reformulate that hypothesis by saying that culture and then the level of productive forces within the society and how those forces are controlled and shared is the one really that determines the motive force of history. So coming back to culture, he's saying that what is important, especially for the African middle class who, in contact with Europe, having been humiliated by the process of colonialism, have been frustrated for a long time and studying, to revisit their own history and their whole culture and trying to reclaim their historical background as an African. He was saying that culture is relevant as long as it allows the specific element of the society, which is the African petit bourgeoisie, to reconnect with the popular masses in order to be involved in the process that will liberate them, because people are not fighting just for an abstract notion of culture, but culture is a product of a society. And as such, we cannot just stay at the level of theoretical articulation of this phenomenon, because culture is what how people live, how people interact with the environment, how people produce food, clothing, and interact with the other human being. All that set of values and elements represented culture. And so culture cannot be just seen on the abstract level as being, you know, music or dance and et cetera, but it's much more profound, and that it was important for people like him and many other people who are involved in the national liberation across the continent, let's say in Mozambique and in Angola, mm-hmm. for them to prepare themselves for the task ahead to really reconnect with popular culture, the African history, in order to be able to reconnect with the popular masses, to infuse themselves within those populations in order to lead this struggle. Mm-hmm. So it was he kind of departed a little bit by bringing back culture at the center of human activity, by saying that this is not something abstract. So, because when you look at, for example, if I just take the case of Jamaica, for example, or any African country, you can see that the culture of the popular masses are kind of different from the culture that's being produced by the elites within the society. So we cannot just globalize as saying, okay, there's one uniform culture. And when he was back in Guinea-Bissau and trying to get prepared for this struggle, he was involved in a very deep interaction with the peasantry in trying to really understand the positive element within the culture that would allow the movement, the National Liberation Movement, to fund its foundation in order to successfully lead this struggle to its completion.
Can you make that more concrete for us? I mean, how in a very difficult context of waging an armed struggle against the Portuguese in Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, which, you know, already is incredibly complex, concretely, how was this reconnection with culture playing itself out, or did it? Was he ever able really to even, in concrete and less theoretical terms, achieve any level of that?
Yeah, because he said that for them to be even thinking to start the struggle, they have to understand the population they will want to get involved in this struggle. And for that, you need to understand the culture of the different ethnic groups, the different social classes within the country. And based on that, you will identify some issue of people, special group of people within the society who potentially might be against the process of national liberation movement or in favor, and that will be in relation to how they locate themselves in terms of their class background within the society, how what was their rank, their position within the society, and that will also influence the culture of those groups. So for just at the practical level, what we can say very, very, very briefly is that culture is what people, is not an abstract concept, but rather it is a product of a society that is evolving. As I mentioned earlier, it's how people interact with the environment, how they interact between themselves, and how they interact with other group of peoples. And all those elements are reflected in the culture. That's why we can say that without understanding that dimension of culture, one can hardly be in a position to identify how people might position themselves in regard to some critical issues like what should we do with this process of colonialism, who can fight with it, who might be against it, and that when we go to that level, you see that most of the elements from the African middle class or upper middle class is mostly very antagonistic in mm-hmm. regards to this process of liberation. And that will lead you to try to ally yourself with the peasantry, which is the bulk of the population in the African context, in the new colonial context, because these are the ones who have interest in not only keeping their culture and regaining their culture, but also to get rid of colonialism. And during that process of struggle, of course, the culture itself will get transformed in the process, because the struggle itself generates elements that will transform the relationship between human beings, between different human groups. So that's why it comes back to the idea that culture is something very dynamic that's evolving, and what makes move is through the process of national liberation movement, when people are fighting, when people try to adjust, when people are interacting with different groups and different elements. That's what kind of fueled some content within the culture of a society.
Amit, this links nicely to one of Amilcar Cabral's other concepts and something that he tried to develop, and that's the notion of class suicide as essential to a fundamental transformation and liberation. Can you explain to us a little bit the concept of class suicide?
Yeah, the concept arises from the fact that when you look at the historically at the situation of the African colonies, only the middle class or the educated class of people were really in a position to lead the struggle for national liberation. And being part of that group of people who, in a sense, is a privileged group compared to the bulk of the population, what happened most of the time is that the natural tendency of elements coming from that group is that to fight and then try to consolidate their position within the society. So when you have the process of national liberation movement, most of the time it's triggered by elements from the petite bourgeoisie, people who are educated like me, or people who have access to some type of formal education. And most of the time, also because of that, they have the potential to betray the process of deepening the national liberation movement, to take it to another level of social transformation. So what Cabral is saying is that for that not to happen, the petite bourgeoisie have to commit class suicide, which means that more or less elements from that group, so social group, will have to abandon their aspiration as a class to as a privileged group, and try to identify themselves with the interests and the aspiration of the majority of the population, which are much more poor, which are the peasantry of the country. So unless that process of self that process of people voluntarily and consciously abandoning their class aspiration as an elite, and then putting at the forefront the interests of the majority of the people, unless that process succeeds, you have the germs of betrayal of the causes of the national liberation movement or the revolution. And that can be verified throughout history in a lot of different areas. And before Cabral, a person like Frantz Fanon also kind of called into attention that aspect of the fact that when these countries achieve independence, most of the time, people who are leading the struggle, who are, as I say, part of this elite group of African petite bourgeoisie, tend to just try to replace those who are occupying the position of power during the colonial era. And it is important for only few elements within that group are capable of voluntarily and consciously abandoning the possibility of having access to privileges and position of power, and then put forward only the interests of the majority of the population, which they do not belong because they are not part of the social class. So the concept of the class suicide, more or less, to put it into very simple idea, is people from a social background that is very privileged to decide themselves that they will ally themselves with those from the underprivileged classes below in order to be able to be involved in their struggle for transformation.
You're listening to Amandla here on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, CQUT.ca around the world, and I'm in conversation with Amet Lowe of GRILA, the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa. We're marking the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Amilcar Cabral, who was killed by agents of the Portuguese secret police on January 20th, 1973. So, Amet, after that sad, devastating event of his assassination, Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde did attain their independence, but the revolution was almost immediately derailed. And I'm wondering what that teaches us. I mean, does that just simply tell us that the assassination of a leader is sufficient to derail a revolution, or were there somehow seeds within the movement, the PAIGC, that undermined the effectiveness of the revolution and you know, in a way, brought forth its own failure? How do we think about it 40 years later that it was so quickly derailed?
Yes, it comes, and in my sense, in a way, it comes back to this question we just talked about before, which is the question of having elements that are part of the movement, kind of moving away from the original vision that was set forward in terms of objective of the National Liberation Movement, and that also, yeah, there you have other complexities like the nature of the weakness of the society, the social structures that are not very consolidated at the time of independence. But in the case of Guinea-Bissau, and I think another element that have played very negative role in terms of moving the process of national liberation away from its original course, of course, was the assassination of Thomas of Cabral, who used to be the one of the main thinkers of the movement, but also the role of the army in post independence Guinea-Bissau, I think, has been very, very play an important role in disrupting that process. And it's interesting that there was a speech that was given by Cabral in Conakry at the funeral of Kwame Nkrumah, where he addressed this question of the role of the army in post-independence African countries. And that speech was called, I believe, the Cancer of Betrayal, something like that. And then the point he was trying to make during that speech was that the army, especially when it comes out from a liberation movement, at the end, when the country gets into independence, will have to go through a radical transformation in order not to be in a position to capture the state power and then direct where the country should go. And it's something that we can verify in a lot of different countries, because most of the violent outcome that have interrupted most of the in the interesting processes that were taking place in Africa have been put to an end with the role being played by the army. Mm-hmm. That was true in Ghana with the removal of Kwame Nkrumah from power. That was true with the assassination of Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso, with the killing of Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. So all this in all this situation, there is a fundamental need to have the neo-colonial army to be really restructured and its mission kind of refocus, recentered around the needs of the population in terms of projects for social transformation. If we don't do that, because the leadership of the army most of the time, again, is coming from this specific privileged class of educated people who have attended all these these military schools. They kind of fail to commit what we just talked about, which is the phenomenon of class suicide, and then at one point attempted to capture the state power to rule. And Cabral have always been mentioning this and then saying that in the process of national liberation movement, the political structure of the movement should always be above the military aspect of the struggle. The military is just and the army and the arms is just a tool that's being used. But what will really determine if the country is independent or not, at the end of the day, is the social content that's going to be put into the process of national liberation, and that can be verified by asking simple questions like, is the population in a better position after independence to live and then to have access to a better healthcare system, mm-hmm. to have access to a better education, to have better access to feed itself better, and those are the elements that are much more complex in terms of bringing solution into it than really the military aspect of the national liberation movement. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Guinea-Bissau, as I mentioned, the first military coup that happened very early on after independence that have kind of put a country into a cyclical phenomenon of military coup that never managed to create a situation of serenity, of calm in the country. And of course, once you have that president set, sometimes it's very hard to really keep momentum on the political vision that should have been the underlying basis that should have led the country to where it should be going, rather than, and that whole process was disrupted by a series of military coups. And today, as we speak, the country is one of the most unstable, mm-hmm. with a connection of between the army, the narco traffic, and also elites who are fighting between themselves in clans and trying to control the state apparatus in order to enrich themselves or have a position of power that allows them to live better than compared to the rest of the majority of the population.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Ahmet. As you know, Cabral was also a poet in his own right, and one of the poems he wrote, Regreso, has been put to music by Cesária Évora, among others. It talks about rain on the island of Cabo Verde, Cabo Verde being this island surrounded by ocean, but in fact quite a desert where rain very, very rarely falls, and that kind of very difficult contradiction for the people who live on that island. And I kind of like to think that it was a metaphor for Cabral about how, objectively speaking, there are these very difficult circumstances, but under the right conditions, transformation is possible. So we're going to end with Cesária Évora's version of Regreso. And Ahmet, thank you. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us.
Maybe last one, just for the listeners, for people who would like to learn a little bit more about Cabral, a mm-hmm. good reference would be a book called Unity and Struggle. That's something that people can Google and then find more information.
Nice.
Because we believe that during this 40th anniversary, it is very important to revisit the vision of Portugal of Abimael Cabral, specifically within today's current context happening in West Africa with all the instability. And then Cabral, when we reconnect with this vision, we can see that there are lights that could inform our struggle going ahead. So I would encourage people to do a little bit more research if they are interested to know, learn more about Cabral.
Unity and Struggle. Okay. Thank you very much, Ahmet. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.